The science of it, I get my raw products all come in from America, sheet glass, rod, and crushed. So the glass itself has already been made in that sense, and then I'll break up those sheets, rearrange them into patterns and stuff like that, and remelt it down into different designs and that sort of stuff.
The colour range is amazing, but also too there's the little touches of sparkle or little trickles of colour oozing through the solid glass. How do you create the patterns? How do you get the magic inside that glass?
Well, I'm a little bit secretive about it. There are a few other glass fusers in Australia, and a lot of glass workers are quite secretive. I usually wait until I've nailed a technique for about a year, released a lot of the products, and then I'll start to share the information on how it's done. To get those very thin lines of colour through the glass, it's multiple firings up to maybe four or five times through the kiln. Once you go past five times in the kiln, the glass starts to change composition, so then it becomes rubbish. So you've got to kind of do what you want to do within five firings or less.
You really need to know the science behind it too, don't you?
Yeah, it's absolutely an exact science. The reason I buy all the glass from America is that one company, it's all the same coefficient of expansion, a bit of the science behind it. When things heat up, when they cool, they shrink or they expand. So they have to shrink at exactly the same time. If they don't, then cracks will appear through the products. So the company in America, they've been running now for 40 years. They've got the science part of getting the colours right. As long as I don't cross-contaminate with a different kind of glass that I use, then everything's usually pretty good.
Craig, do you remember your first glass making experiences, what those early pieces were like?
Yeah, I do. It's actually a good memory because I was working at the Aboriginal Arts Centre here. And I'd always wanted to do glass, and I was lucky enough down in Perth one day to walk into a glass shop, and I bought I think $100 worth of glass rods, and then I bought a plumber's brazing burner for about $40 from the hardware, and I made a bunch of wonky beads. It was the very first thing I did in glass, and as soon as I did it, I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. So it took me about 38 years to find what I really wanted to do. I've always loved glass. I always used to buy a lot of it. But now I'm doing it. It's what I want to do, so it's what I'll always do until I'm dead, hopefully.
What is it about the glass that has just captured you so? When you made those first wonky beads, you said that it just got you. What is it?
I've always experimented when I've been an artist. When I was a potter, I'd pretty much tried all of the pottery techniques that were available, and that was about 15 years to kind of go to the end of that stage where I thought I'd done everything that was possible with ceramics. Now with glass, there's two different types of glass, and I reckon in a lifetime there's no way you could get to the end of all of those different things that you can do with it. Having transparency adds a completely new, it's a different ball game altogether. So I'm still experimenting, still producing new things, and I'll still continue to do so. I think it'll never really get to a point where I'll think that I've done all that you can, because there's so much different things you can do with glass. And that's what keeps me interested. There's always something new to find out with it. So that's the interesting part for me.
Well, you make some amazing pieces. Yes, there are the beautiful pieces, the platters and the pendants and the ornaments, but there's also a reflection of your quirky sense of humour and your wry look at life with funny eyeballs and strange little alien critters and creatures from the sea. It looks like you have a lot of fun very often in creating these glass pieces.
Oh, I have an absolute ton of fun with that sort of stuff. I mean, this year I've had to say to myself to focus more on, I guess, the tourist market, more things that people are after. Last year I kind of fell into a spot where I was just making all of those fun things. And they don't always sell as well as the more popular products. Making the fun stuff is really good because it's always a challenge. There's always, maybe four or five different techniques in making a complex piece. So to get it right is always good. I was working on a perfume bottle the other day I'd spent 2 hours on. And just at the final stages, the whole bottom piece is cracked off and it was straight in the bin. It was in front of a group of tourists watching. So I guess they kind of get a sense of a loss. So yeah, it doesn't always work, but 90% of the time these days it does work. So yeah, it's good fun.
Now, Craig, this workshop is a paradise of activity, and you've got benches full of tools and creations and half-made bits of stuff and interesting machinery and boxes. What is it like when your glass-blowing furnace is on, you're in full swing, and how do you operate? It surely can't be in the heat of a 45-degree Fitzroy day.
No, I've kind of found a bit of a way around that. I've bought it at an old ice cream factory down in Tasmania, so I'll transplant the workshop, keep the gallery here, but transplant the workshop to a colder region. And it is good having tons of equipment. I mean, one of the best things in the morning is going right, you know, having a look in both the furnaces, seeing how yesterday's products came out. And if I get bored, you know, putting stuff in the kiln, then I'll chop stuff up on the diamond saw or hit stuff in the sandblaster. Or go and serve some customers in the gallery or put gift boxes on labels. There's absolute ton of different jobs to do. So it keeps me pretty interested, and I'm pretty lucky to be able to do what I love doing and make a career out of it.